Okay, this is board time on Wednesday, 5 March.
Okay, we've got a packed agenda here. We've got a bunch of folks here to talk about the ambulance contract, and Axel's sort of been the board's lead on this. So,
well, yeah. Dave Fuller is here as well, and Dave and I have been working on this a lot. I just jumped into this recently in the last few weeks. But as you know, we run a regional ambulance service combined with the City of Vancouver EMS District 2, which you all are the board for. That's turning over, and what Vancouver, the last policy decision that we had was that Vancouver wants to go out for an RFP and potentially split the district or potentially not. And so we've been working through that with them, and as recently as Monday night went to the council meeting, they've had a consultant looking at the two different areas that are represented within EMS District 2 and the City of Vancouver. They've come back with some numbers, and so the last time we all met and got some policy direction from the Board of Commissioners and the Board of District 2, our theory was we were going to begin working towards one RFP, two contracts, one for the City of Vancouver, one for EMS District 2. With the numbers coming back what they are, and with the consultations we've had with the City of Vancouver and the City of Vancouver Fire Department the last few weeks, what we think where we're at now is we probably need just to change direction a little bit with the board. One RFP, so one RFP, one contract, and then with an interlocal potentially or a memorandum of understanding with the City of Vancouver between EMS District 2 and the City of Vancouver. And so that's kind of what we have been working on, as well as a parallel path. Dave, I'll kind of let you talk a little bit about secondarily kind of what we're looking at. We're kind of on a crunched, condensed time frame, and that's why we've been working so hard on this last few weeks. But we've got a couple of approaches we're taking.
Just remind me, if you would, it wasn't us, it wasn't the county and the districts that were proposing bifurcating the contract and having two contracts, right? Wasn't that the City of Vancouver originally looking to have their own contract with this?
Correct. Initially, the city had chose that they would like to have a more direct relationship with the provider of the contract.
Right.
And so they had proposed to split off from the current EMS District 2 and create kind of their own contract service area as it relates to the City of Vancouver and District 5, which is an area that they contractually serve.
And are they now coming back around to the idea of having the collaboration of one contract, or what's?
They're seeing the same information that we're seeing, and recognize that rather than doing one RFP for two contract service areas, which is what we last came to the board with, that it makes more sense for us if we were to look at a single service area and enter more into a contractual relationship with the city, so we could bid the system as a whole and allow a vendor to provide one coverage plan for the county as a whole. They still intend to oversee the contract, so our relationship would be different than what it currently is. It would need to be addressed either through an interlocal or essentially through an interlocal agreement, and be more of a contractual relationship as it relates to what the performance will be within the remainder of EMS District 2. So that's sort of the direction, or the okay that we're here seeking from you, is to kind of pursue that direction. The other thing that we're currently looking at, though, is discussing with the current provider what potentials are for an extension or for a modification of our current contract. For a short period of time, that would allow us to go back and look at are there other options out there that would make the most sense for the district. Both, like Axel said, this is kind of a tight timeline, and we're really trying to go about and look at here's at least two options that allows the district to pick which one's going to work the best for the remainder of the district. We've involved the fire chiefs that are the primary providers within the district, and trying to make sure that we're moving forward in a way that makes sense to them and really looks out for the best interest of the district, and combines the synergies that we may be able to get with the city in a single RFP.
So this is a change to how it's been. But I think most of what we've heard from the experts, what we heard in the presentation on Monday was, a regional system for the synergies and the efficiencies makes sense for the most part. But, we definitely want to keep the other option open as we work with the City of Vancouver on their effort for an RFP. The things I gave you show sort of some just what it would look like if we did potentially go out one RFP, one contract, 10 and 20-minute zones. I think we're pretty good in terms of everybody being okay with what we've come up with for response times, which is, that's kind of the primary, the big thing is how fast the transport gets there. Secondarily, this is obviously a change in how governance will take place within the system, and that's what we have to work through with the MOA over the next month is what does it look like now? What does it mean? How does communication happen when system changes occur? How do we work together? And that's changing, and that's not something you just change overnight. We got to work through it. So we're not there yet, but our hope is to continue working over this month to get there where everybody's happy.
From the county's point of view, if we're guaranteed that there are 20 minutes, basically anything outside that original Vancouver area is 20 minutes, what's to negotiate?
Well, Dave, why don't you explain kind of where we've historically been with, because the response times are critical and key, so why don't you kind of give them an overview of where we've been and where this goes?
Yeah, under this model, it changes the response times from what we were originally looking at as far as the urban area, the suburban, and the rural. Under this model, there wouldn't really necessarily be a suburban response time. A lot of what was incorporated into the former suburban is now part of the urban and gets a quicker response time at 10 minutes, but then the remainder of it's really at rural, which is a 20-minute response time, which is where our current response times are in the rural area. The part that we want to negotiate and make sure that that we address is if there's a change in the city, we don't want it to adversely impact the level of performance that we're contracting with into the district. And there's some other kind of operational discussions that we need to have as it relates to how is the contract administrated, what does that look like for the district, how does the district hold essentially the city in this case accountable to the contract that we sign off with them. And so kind of the devil's in the details to a certain extent, but we need to look at what the RFP is, make sure it meets our needs, and then that we have an agreement, an interlocal agreement that meets the district's needs, and particularly the fire districts that we're covering.
So if I heard you correctly, currently we have three zones, 10, 15, 20, right, minutes?
Correct.
And this proposes two zones,
correct.
10 and 20. Aside from that difference, the other factors are small in comparison. We're not talking about price. Price is not really one of the factors to be that's negotiable in this. If they're the drivers, they're the sole providers, and we contract through them, price is not an issue, right?
Yeah, the price will be set through what the responses are to the bid that are put out.
So if you set aside for a minute the three zone versus the two zone and price is not an issue, what's left of any significance that would be important?
It really becomes the relationship of switching from the current EMS district to providing the oversight and administration of the contract to the city providing the oversight and administration and us essentially contracting with them to do that.
Is there some? So, but I assume that they're either going to administer it in that they fulfill the requirements or they don't. That's really not in question. They're going to, unless there's something you feel like, oh, they can, this big gray area, their performance and their behavior is going to be very different without our oversight. It sounds like it's either they're going to do it to standards or they're not.
Correct, and that's the part that needs to be worked out and make sure that we address clearly in an interlocal agreement.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right, Commissioner. I mean, I think that the response times are critical, and we're getting close, if not, the fact that we're there on those, but But there are just a few things in the governance model that we need to work out through this MOA. If they are going to control the contract, if they are going to call the shot, so to say, on system changes and those kind of things now, that is a shift in what's historically been done. Mm-hmm. I think we just want to make sure as a district we're comfortable with what they set up for how we will communicate those changes, when notice will be required for those changes, and what our allowable response will be. To advocate, you know, one way or the other. I think we just got to nail that down.
It comes right down to the contract. So basically that contract, the MOU with them, you can say it's really important to us. We really don't want to go from three zones to two zones. We want that to be a three-zone contract. You got yours, but we want a 15 and a 20. We just don't want a 20.
But a lot of the 15 turned into a 10 in this model.
Yeah.
Like almost all of the 15 turned into a 10. So we actually get better service. And the 10 goes all the way up to Battleground, which used to be in the rural zone in between Battleground and Vancouver, and was a 20.
So that is not an issue then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we feel that we've addressed the response time issue pretty well, and I think that we have agreement that looks appropriate good. And good.
Yeah.
So price is not an issue, and the time is not an issue. You've pretty much taken out the significant issues out of the differences, right?
No real issue. We're just looking for a head nod on two things. One,
it's a change.
We're just looking for a head nod from the board today to make that one small change. That is, we're going to pursue a partnership with the city for one RFP, one contract, not two contracts. We just need you guys to be okay with that and to also allow us to continue to explore possibly a short-term extension under our current contract.
And it's what the chiefs, you're recommending that, right?
Yes, we are.
Sure, we support the Chiefs.
That's all, I mean, that's
there
all
could be an increase,
we were looking for.
You explained to me before there's more than likely going to be an increase, and we have no control over that, and we don't negotiate it.
Well, if we went to two contracts,
there'd be more of an increase.
There'd be a big increase based on all the numbers we've seen, and so, I mean, doing it in one contract definitely will help ratepayers. I mean, it will be a lower cost to ratepayers than if we were to do two separate contracts.
Could be more than what we paid today.
But we anticipate that. We've anticipated that all along. That we're at the end of a 10-year contract. We're about 18% below what the Portland metro area is as it relates to ambulance rates. We've done everything we can to address and eliminate cost into the system so that hopefully we can get a good bid. But that bid. Mm-hmm. We anticipate it's going to come back higher than what we're currently doing. So
it sounds like you're already of the two potential choices that are in front of us. One is this one, which is higher than we are now, or that one, which is higher than that.
Correct.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So we did increase the rate on the last year or the year before.
A couple of years.
It's been probably two to three years.
So it's not a 10-year-old rate.
So we would, where we're at now is we're going to continue down these two parallel paths. Council is going to meet again. They had some more questions for the chief, I think, on March 24th or something, but they do really want to get out with this RFP by the end of the month or early April. So we would be coming back to you all with, if we decide to go that direction, one contract, one RFP, we'll need some sort of letter of intent or documentation which says that to the city before they send that RFP out. So that we would come back to you in a month or so.
Can we put an RFP out with two options? But I assume we're going to have no less than two ambulance services paid for it. And so you can put it out for one contract in its entirety, or you do two separate contracts and see what we get. That would help us a whole lot making the decision.
So let me see if I understand the question correctly. The single RFP, and what we're going to suggest is that the city bid it as the city alone and what their price would be, and then the city plus the district. But it's still as a single contract. So if for some reason we as a district decided, no, we don't want to go that way, they at least have a good bid for the remainder of the city. To go ahead and to bid it out both ways, essentially that's again going back to having two contracts
by one provider, which is going to have more expense to it than if it's a single contract
service. And you're certain of that?
Because at some point, we're asking the contractor to build in redundancy into the system. So if you have two contracts that they're trying to serve, and you get down to one ambulance, which one of the contracts are you going to cover and serve? Whereas if it's one large service area, they can put that resource in the most appropriate spot to meet the next available call.
And who's going to get the better bid? If we had a two contract single RFP, who's going to get the lower cost?
The city will.
Because by a little?
They have 26,000 calls.
Yeah, this chart I gave you, the red shows where the most calls are, which is where the most revenue is. And I gave you
my point. Will there be a significant difference in dollars for the bid for both?
Yes, potentially. If you ask them to just bid our 6,000 transports versus combining for the 32,000 transports, we're not going to get as good a bid on standing on ourselves. But to hedge our bet, right, we're also having those discussions with AMR as far as what would an extension look like to make sure that we got a good gauge beyond the model of the consultants.
We're going to cover all our bases, but it looks like a single system.
We're losing our ability to negotiate. And the city's going to tell us what they're going to pay. One thing that I keep bringing up here, they collect more money from the people outside of Vancouver. Vancouver are lucky to get paid. So they may have more calls, but their revenue might be the same because we have half the calls, but everybody out in the county pays.
But all the numbers we're seeing are saying that the rates for our rate payers are going to be dramatically higher. And not just dramatically higher than what they are now, but dramatically higher than what the people in the city are going to be paying. And if you throw it out for a two-contract process that shows the city saying, God, we could save a bundle if we just did this on our own.
We just shove more over on the county.
And
if there are
people, the chiefs and all the folks working on it, have gotten people together to be able to say, look, this is one system and this is life and death we're talking about, so let's not play the games of, you know, who pays what and when. Let's try to keep it as low as possible for everybody. I think that's great. I think that's a good thing that, you know, they're trying to keep it a little lower for us, because, you know, you can stand on pride, but your citizens are going to pay a lot more.
A little lower, it's higher. Be very, very clear. It's going to be a great deal higher than what we're paying today.
It's going to be a heck of a lot higher than that if we try to get all prideful.
I don't think that the city's going to determine the price at all. This is a competitive bid process.
Yeah.
Whoever
bids.
Bidders are going to tell us what the price will be for this.
We're going to be bound in contract for how long?
6 years, right?
The initial term is 6 years. One of the areas that we're talking about in our interlocal agreement is whether or not it makes sense to have an early out for the district. So,
do we still get?
I think that's really important. 6 years is a long time. I mean, this is driving us to be a better deal to create an EMS district and put it to a voter, out to the voters for a vote.
We're going to look into the legality of an early out clause. That could potentially obviously affect a vendor's bid, because they got to know what they're bidding on over what time. So we haven't played that all out, but we are looking into that.
And do we still have, one of the things that we've done over the years, and you mentioned it and reminded me, is that because we had control over the contract and control over how we set our standards, you guys have done amazing work to set metrics that save the rate, you know, the people who actually make the call and get the ride, you know, saving them money on the ride by changing the metrics for success, you know, and changing what we require of them. Would we still, as a board, would we still have the flexibility to be able to try to save money? Because, I mean, when we raised that rate, we were being asked to raise it a lot more than that, and we said, whoa, no, we can't do that. Go back, see what you can find in efficiencies. You guys changed a bunch, you know, changed some metrics with them. Will we still have the ability to do that?
And again, that's where our contractual relationship with the city needs to be banked out.
And so
that each of us have some ability to manage our own
good
side of the system. but be able to communicate with each other. So if we make a change over here that adversely impacts the city, they're going to want to know that. Or conversely, if they make a change that could adversely
impact. Just so long as there's still flexibility built in to be able to find efficiencies and savings when you see them. You know, when you see them out in the field, like, hey, I wish that we could do it this way.
Yeah.
You know, we got to have the ability to do that.
Yes, and they're very interested in that as well.
Okay.
But that's what our interlocal agreement would spell out if we go down that path.
I got a couple questions. Talk about the city. There's multiple cities in Clark County. What about Camas, Washougal, Battleground? Are they considered county, or are they somehow linking up also with Vancouver?
So, in this case, when we refer to the city, we're referring to the city of Vancouver. Camas and Washougal actually are outside of EMS District 2. They have their own ambulance service area that's a fire-based system, and they are not part of this process at all.
Okay. So they got their own levy that takes care of that.
Correct.
Yeah.
And in addition, there's the north end of the county that Commissioner Mielke referred to, where that's served by North Country EMS. They also have a levy, and they serve the cities of Amboy, Colt, and then portions of the other counties as well.
So this contract is to cover what's left over.
Yeah. Correct. So the cities of Battleground, La Center, Ridgefield, and then the areas served by Fire District 6, Fire District 3, and then Clark County Fire and Rescue.
Okay. And I assume that it wouldn't make sense for us to, in addition to what we would normally do here, also put out an RFQ for just those remaining areas, just simply as an independent proposal that maybe somebody would respond to. Probably they won't. We kind of think they won't. But you don't know with open.
To which areas?
Well, the area outside the city of Vancouver. Well, outside the what's already covered.
EMS District 2 is what you're talking about. And we have looked into that. And that, in fact, is where we were headed with the one RFP, two contracts. But the numbers you have there that have provided that, you know, it doesn't look like it pencils. Because, you know, Commissioner Mielke made a good point. We do have, you know, our calls do generate typically more revenue maybe per call, but we just don't have the calls to generate enough revenue, and it shows that, you know, we're somewhere between a $3 and $5 million loss if we go it alone, and you've got to ask yourself who's going to bid on that.
Yep.
And so that's why a regional system, and that's why we're asking for the direction to at least be able to pursue the one contract, because that synergy is what makes it work.
So we feel like we are very confident that there's no possibility that some other provider is going to come in and fill that hole and do it reasonably.
Knowing that they would lose those amounts of money, no.
Well, that's why we're also asking for you to give us authority to pursue potentially the short-term contract extension and to look into that, because we don't want to close the door completely on that. But it, you know.
So this kind of comes down to what terms are in the contract.
Correct.
And that's why I'm so glad that Chris is here.
The short-term extension would not be for the combined. It would only be for
EMS District 2.
That's
and the only.
So then they would quote us prices.
Correct.
Commensurate with
sort of like a gap coverage, period of time while we go back and say, knowing everything that we know, can we redesign the system? Can we bring in
and double the fee?
Exactly. So, but then that would actually allow you to say, do we want to have a levy to help support that service?
Some alternative.
But you got to file to get that on the ballot.
But we can't.
Way early.
But we can't do that in the time frame that we currently have.
Right.
So therefore, we either go with the city, and depending on what the agreements that we come up contractually with them,
mm-hmm.
or we go with an extension, knowing that we can probably push that out about a maximum of 18 months past January 1st, 2015. Which would give us opportunity to go back and look to see if there's another viable option. So, and what we're asking you for is permission to continue to explore both of those and come back to you with what we think is give you a choice. So,
okay.
That works.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right.
Thanks for all your work.
You guys are all on board.
We get to keep working.
That's what you want. You got it.
Thank you very much.
squeeze.
Sure, that makes sense.
Good seeing you. Yep.
Thanks for coming down.
Good to see you.
Thank you.
Man, a few words. On that. Thanks, Doug.
Thanks, Doug. Thanks, Dave.
Dave, good job.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thanks
Thank
for all
you.
Your work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's the receiving language.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Yeah. Doing it seriously.
There's a reason why the Cyrus Walk Group has their own.
Well, with the levy. We don't have a levy.
Yeah, they're not doing that.
You're trying to raise people down. That's
kind of. I was going to say, Granny.
This is yeah.
Even though she doesn't use a service.
That's the difference.
That's right. That's
the difference. She's eating her cake, you know?
Because this is just the price per ride, right? And so, like, you
don't need to buy anything unless you make the call for the ambulance.
Yeah.
User fee.
But if you're in North Country, everybody pays it. It's all spread, but, you know, paying the spread.
It's a tool.
It's just a different way.
No, the last one we tacked the increase on the back end of the insurance company.
But we tacked it on whoever makes the call, right? So whether the insurance pays the bill for the person who makes the call or if they're indigent and they make it or whatever.
Well, North County is that way, kind of.
North County is a property tax, isn't it?
Yes. Property tax.
So everybody pays it.
And insurance charge.
It's both.
It's both.
There's two sources of income.
Okay.
And the difference for Camas Wushugal a little bit is because it's denser, it makes it easier to service that area. They don't have to travel as far.
Well, it's a fire-based system, so they've integrated it with their fire response.
So how much
does the density actually bring them less money?
In some cases, I don't know about Camas Wushugal. They may have better payers.
They're lucky to get 50%, and I'm going to find out what that rate is.
So before we just let it go, about how much does it add to a typical property tax bill?
I don't know. I have to double check.
I'm not sure what the levy rate is on theirs.
Okay, just curious.
Okay, Commissioner Stewart,
could you find that out for us when you get a
levy rates
low
for
when you're knitting or crocheting?
Yeah, all your free time.
Well,
Commissioner Stewart missed the work session. I don't know if you want to do just a brief
on the industrial site readiness.
On the economic development action team and the action framework.
No, we got so we had one work session that I was here for where they did the initial ask on it, right?
Right.
So I was there for that.
Okay, we had one today as well.
We put
some meat on the bones.
Okay, more detail to the project itself.
Yes.
Got it. All right. I'm
the approach we want to take, the different projects we want to undertake in St. John's, Barberton.
I'm with you. All right.
Public investment area.
And so Commissioners Mielke and Mador gave the team approval to move ahead with the action plan.
Good team. What you doing?
But there was an ask there that we needed to provide more detail on at board time, and that's what they're here to do.
Okay. Talk about site readiness again.
Yeah, great.
Okay. So I passed around a document. It's two-sided. It responds to some of the questions on site readiness that we've had from the prior work session last fall. So to answer those, what is site readiness project? It's a marketing tool for businesses expanding and locating in the county to help them find land. And identifies some available, developable employment sites, but it's not a complete inventory of land. So you set a threshold of the type of site you're looking for, 20-acre, 25-acre, fits certain industrial profiles, and then do a deep dive on those sites and look at constraints.
Just for this is the Barberton area only, right? Because there's only what?
Well, 4 and 3, wasn't it?
This is
we're doing it
four
too,
sites
right?
in St. John's, Barberton, and 3 in the Discovery Corridor.
Okay, so basically you're talking about 7 sites.
Yep.
10,000 apiece.
Small enough.
It's not comprehensive, but it gives us a good start.
When you say 7 sites, you mean 7 parcels?
No, I mean 7 sites. So we would look at
7 sub areas. I mean,
geographic
boundaries.
It's kind of a gray area between a sub area and a parcel. So what you're looking at is if there are 8 to 10 parcels in an area, and you can make a 20 or 25 acre site. They have different ownership.
I see
you aggregate those.
Okay.
So,
when you say site, you mean like a site for a business to drop down out of it, and it could be multiple parcels now.
Exactly.
But ultimately, you're envisioning it as one business park or one industrial complex or whatever.
Yep. Exactly.
I got it.
Okay.
So the number of lots are multiple times that 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 higher than the number of sites.
Yes.
Okay.
That makes sense. Okay.
And so you want the green light to pursue that contractual effort. That's what you're asking for.
That's what we're looking for.
Okay. So are you only focusing on sites where the parcels are for sale?
We're not.
Good. That's great. That is an advance from what has been done in the past. Because what they, and when they were doing, like even when CREDC did their original kind of, you know, ready for
land for jobs.
Yeah, the land for jobs. They looked at land that was already for sale, and it doesn't take into account that there's probably other land that is suited perfectly for industry that just nobody's talked to that person about. So
yeah, that's part of the study effort is to reach out to the property owners and find out what their willingness to sell is and what their willingness to accept on
and
the price level is.
If we end up with the right kind of infrastructure, the right kind of big picture plan,
then
their motivation to make it available is consistent with ours.
Exactly.
We want to be able to make it available so that good things, the highest, best use of it can happen for jobs.
Yep. Right.
So I think where I was hung up on it was we were looking at infrastructure that we were going to put in, and a lot of it we have already done around that area, and so I wanted to make sure.
Around Barberton, you mean? Or?
Yeah, in the Barberton area. So I didn't want to go back and duplicate the work that we've already done.
Yeah, good call.
We've already done that work. Schulte and Heath were there.
Good.
There is more to do, though.
We are going to cut that road through there before.
Was that 40th or?
Yes.
47th. Between 78th and 68th.
We saw the need to cut those roads through before.
No doubt.
We went to economic development. So one of the things I was wanting to see more of is that what are we looking for? You had talked about before the number of lots, talking to the property owners, doing the environmental impact study more or less.
Right.
And then the other more technical part that we may not have on staff is go back and look at what it would take to make the lot ready.
Yeah.
And for example, if there's a grade difference that you brought
right.
up. So where I was going with it was that I wanted to use as much in-house experience that we have before going out to hire a consultant.
Right.
And if you hired a consultant, could you make that part of the scope with the consultant to say, look, we want to maximize use of our own personnel, and you may and there may be gaps above which we can't get to, or little gap fillers that we're going to need, but can we just have that be part of the scope? Because I agree with you.
I think we have the ability to contact landowners. We have the ability to know who the landowners are before the consultant is. The consultant is going to come to us, the county, to find out who the owners are. It's already here. We can do that. And then one by one, we go out and talk to those landowners. I'm thinking Barberton in the back.
Right. And the work the consultants would do would be primarily looking at historical use on a site. So somebody mentioned to me after the work session this morning that there's a site out in Barberton area, and there were barrels buried on the site. So, you know, we wouldn't necessarily know that, but a consultant would investigate those issues. And those are the kinds of things that, you know, you could build a road to that site, but it may never develop because of liability associated with it, because of sensitive areas on the site that we don't have a full understanding of.
Who would have that information?
Well, I think that the consultant can develop that information through contract with the property owner.
So it would be research done through the property owner?
Yes.
In many cases, that property owner may not be the one that polluted it, for example.
Right.
No one knows what's in the ground, so I'm not quite sure.
So they'd take course, and I mean, they'd actually go in there and they'd get a contract with the landowner to say, hey, can we go on site and take a look? And then they'd go in and do core samples and figure out, all right, what's the soil, what's the sub, you know, what's underneath there. There are things they can do with tools that I don't completely understand, but I've seen it done.
You can
accomplish, I mean, what Commissioner Stewart, I think, is talking about is something that Public Works does a lot of. We do consultant contracts, and then what you do is you don't have a particular scope of work. What you do is you generate task orders. So to the extent you can do work in-house, then you do that work. To the extent you hit a point where you know there's certain areas that are outside your area of expertise, or you don't have manpower, or you've got time constraints, or whatever those are, you generate task orders, and then you have those people do them. So you can actually incorporate both what you're describing, which is the opportunity to use somebody who's faster, who's more available, and maybe has more expertise, together with staff, and come up with a project that, that gets you in time and maintains your flexibility to, you know, monitor costs.
And that's, I think, where I am.
Mm-hmm.
I recognize that.
Okay. Yeah. No, I totally agree.
Great.
And I just want to use our staff when they have that ability yeah. to do that. And then what we can't do in a timely fashion, we already have, in many cases, already people that we contract with for the same thing.
Sure.
But I think what you're talking about is a different person. I think the person you're talking about is probably someone that, that is put together the package to present to a potential buyer. And the consultant that we use is more or less the one that goes out and does the research.
Well,
yeah, Public Works has contracts with like eight different discipline areas. They've got geotech, they've got road design engineers, they've got a wide range of talent available, as does the Department of Environmental Services.
Right.
So would this be going through Public Works? Would they be just continuing to treat this like they're building a road or something?
No, because it's not necessarily associated directly with the road. So
even though the road fund is supposed to be the 100% funding for this consultant,
well,
right?
The road fund funds the consultant that's looking at the street projects that are identified.
They can't do the site prep.
Site readiness would be
the site readiness is doing the real estate research, and
so that comes out of general fund.
So that would come likely out of general fund.
And that's
that is the ask. Yes. So what we're looking for is $30,000 from the general fund to fund the research in Discovery Corridor, and $40,000 from the railroad budget to fund St. John's Farmington.
Do we have a railroad budget?
We do.
Yeah. We do.
So you're not asking for an increase in the railroad budget. You're just asking for authority to use $40,000 of existing budget.
I have $40,000 coming from the settlement on the building that burned that we're not going to replace.
Do we have a supplemental item for $30,000 in the spring supplemental?
I don't believe we do.
Chris, I'm sorry.
No,
I didn't realize you had another engagement.
Did you have any questions for us?
Oh, I just have generated some language, but Axel can read it to me.
Thank you.
Oh, sure.
Thanks, Chris.
Take care, gentlemen.
And we'll continue to generate our own language here.
That's right.
So,
but I think we could do it by the end of the year. We could do it.
But we could, we can backfill.
We could backfill. We could do it for the next round of supplementals.
Yeah. Okay. So the railroad budget is... Does that come in from...
That's general fund.
General fund.
Yeah, but it's already approved budget that he would just use for this purpose.
So the 30 would be the additional that's being asked.
Okay.
Well, in the site prep side, you can't use road fund for it because it's not the road. And there are things that are specific, and you guys know, I mean, you both have businesses, that there are things specific to site prep for businesses.
Yeah.
That, you know, we may need a little expertise on, and we're definitely going to need to do some work on.
It's doing exactly that sort of due diligence.
Yeah, I would like to have you collaborating with our departments, ecology and road department, to see who they have that we've already used in their contracts, and of course they'd be above and beyond, and so on. Yeah, I think there might be a shortcut to go say, go see this guy, and another guy, go see this guy, and it might be easier.
Okay. When this is all said and done, aside from the pretty book that we'll end up with. Basically, what we're going to end up with is like 3-4 years from now, we will have aggregated parcels that are pretty much ready to build stuff, right?
Well,
and we hope that the Port of Vancouver is going to take a lead role in helping to aggregate and
another part
market.
I think.
So when we're looking at these focused public investment areas, one of the things that we're doing is looking at what are the most likely sites, and by sites I mean multiple parcels, to develop. What has the best infrastructure? And so this site readiness study kind of tests that, allows us to dive a little deeper and validate that assumption. Mm-hmm. What we may find through this process is that we have a whole bunch of industrial land, and I think intuitively we kind of know this. We have a lot of industrial land in the county. It's zoned industrial, but it's never seen any activity on it and is likely never going to see any activity on it. So it also provides a basis for our work on the comp plan update.
And that's going to be our selling point to the Port of Vancouver.
That's part of the selling point is, hey, look, here is a site. Here's a gem.
Mm-hmm.
Go for it. We'll do the roads.
There's an example.
We'll do the rail work.
And we're beyond talk here, too, because we're demonstrating action, a commitment to this process, and they need to see that.
Well, are you talking master plan or are you talking planned action ordinance? I mean, how far into this do you plan on getting?
With just the site readiness, we're just looking at what issues need to be addressed.
Okay.
And that helps us uncover the constraints. Then
right.
we try to figure out what are the remedies. So
right.
is it a sub-area plan? Is it master planned area?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't know what we don't know at this point.
Got it. Don't let Marlena talk you into a biomass plant.
Oh, now you got to quit doing that. You got to quit doing that.
Oh, man.
Poor Mark. That was the good one.
That
that's right.
That's 2 years old.
So one of the fundamentals about this is that we're assuming that
she's looking so serious over there.
Aggregation of parcels is the right way to go. That we're going to end up with larger businesses going in that are going to take more acreage. We're not talking about the little businesses are going to just multiply all over. It's going to be more like it's going to look more like the Port of Vancouver.
Right.
Is what we envision.
And this is specifically for industrial, right? We still have lots of land out there for office business parks, for light industrial,
pizza
that may look a lot like the other part of what you were saying. But this is specifically for industry. They need aggregated larger parcels, that kind of thing.
And they need access to infrastructure.
Yes.
And basically railroad. I mean, this is right.
We're looking in St. John's Barberton.
St. John's Barberton, Discovery Corridor, it's highway. That's the access. Yeah,
okay, so we're talking about both.
We are talking about both.
Okay.
So the great thing, both of them are unique areas, and we talked about this morning.
Yeah.
You have rail-served industrial manufacturing land that appears to be viable in St. John's Barberton. In Discovery Corridor, with the proximity to Legacy Hospital and WSUV, healthcare, high-tech, biotech, computer and electronics type of it's still industrial use.
And I know exactly who I'm going to have you go talk to up there at Discovery Corridor.
Not yet, man.
So I was assuming that Port of Vancouver's participation was going to be in the Barberton area, but not in the Discovery Corridor area. Isn't the Discovery Corridor area more?
It's Port of Richfield.
Port of Richfield?
Mm-hmm.
Are they? They're not on the list here.
Stuff is really
specific. Port of Richfield, Jeff.
Oh, yeah.
Easy. <shame.
laughs> Are we assuming that we're not going to do Port of Richfield stuff?
Well, part of the action framework process that we're going through is looking specifically at St. John's Barberton for now.
Good.
And then progressing into Discovery.
Okay. And the difference is that the majority...
Yeah, they're connected to the...
Well, and it's county. I mean, ultimately, the vast majority, if not all of, vast majority, of the properties that are available and developable at the Ridgefield Junction are already contained within the city of Ridgefield.
Yeah.
So the partnership is, there's still a partnership there, but as far as the planning and getting them ready, all of that, that is the responsibility of the county. I mean, 179th Hub and, around there is more of our area within that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's still in the Port District. I think their Port District goes to 134th.
And there is a Discovery Corridor partnership that also does talk about these things, and so they will obviously be a partner in it. But
yeah. And I have been talking to Brent Grinning at the Port of Ridgefield, so we're engaging. It's just preliminary at this point until we finish this and then dive into the action framework development for Discovery Corridor.
Let's talk about the Barberton area for a minute. If the Port of Vancouver went in there,
right,
to aggregate, they would buy those parcels and then they would aggregate them.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then I assume they would, like they've done in some of the areas they've already developed over here, they would sell those parcels to the new industrial business that would come in, and they wouldn't just simply serve normally as a landlord.
They do both.
They don't like to sell it.
Yeah. They do both.
Well, they did over here, and it actually worked out well because they take that cash and reinvest it.
Yeah, I think it depends on the needs of the buyer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they primarily gear their approach to what their customer needs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they'd have the flexibility to do that after already aggregating them, so which would be great.
I'm good.
Yeah, that's great.
Good.
It's exciting. It's good stuff.
Okay, get out. We'll move good. Forward. Go.
Thank you.
$30,000.
Go make jobs.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Oh, to get $30,000. Can you imagine what it'd be like to get $100,000?
Yeah. Yeah. Seriously. That's in the too hard box.
We'll
of course, Oliver got 90 a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, nice. All right.
Next week.
Oh, wait. We're not doing this yet, huh? Oh, yeah, we are. Sorry. Okay.
Axel's awfully pushy about this.
Yeah. Well, this is week three.
The guy that we're talking about, the guy that was just sitting next to you. Right?
I know. This, you guys asked me to redraft the economic development manager director position, Kelly Sills' former position. He's been gone since the 18th, just to put it again on the record. So I did that, and what I did is what you asked. I combined the railroad coordinator sort of job functions and positions together with Kelly's old job description and blended it. I had some help in doing that, so I can't take credit for this really lengthy job description. And, in fact, I floated this to who's been helping me in HR, Judy Alexander, who's been great. And she said we probably would shorten this for a job posting. But I did put it in the job posting format just to give you an idea kind of what it looks like when it goes out. I asked all three of you to review this. I'm not sure if you did.
I think we're all three of us are working on the state of the county address.
Oh, right?
Yeah. I am. I did get a chance to read it, and I had one comment that I did immediately send back to you. And I
got
some.
Yeah.
And under the duties, the one piece of it that I didn't see in there and that I would love to have be part of and continually wanted for that type of position is that they serve as an advocate for business owners or potential business owners going through the permitting process.
That sounds great.
That they help, you know, kind of shepherd new business owners through that process.
That's great.
That was the only other thing that I did see that I thought would be great for them to do.
And I think I'm still back on two positions instead of one. I need another analyst in this office.
Commissioner, you're absolutely right. This is step one.
Yeah.
But the
right
position.
You're combining it with that.
Yeah, but we'll have a vacant position. We anticipate we'll have a vacant position that we can then convert into a policy analyst position. So we'll get right where you want to be.
Well, you look at cups half full. I'm looking at them.
Yeah. Well, what I'm trying to do here is to combine. I'm trying to combine two positions so that I can delete one of them, and that opens up. I'm trying to make it budget neutral to add policy staff in here. So if I can combine two and delete one, that allows us to add one here and not impact the budget, which makes Bob happy and everybody happy. So this combination of the railroad coordinator and Kelly's old position is step one. If we do that, we should have that budget.
And it clears a space to be able to get that
different way. I look at combining one position and still filling one position.
That's what we had been
same difference.
Well, yeah, same idea.
Yeah,
I think you're thinking. Kind of,
yeah, same thing.
That you get to the same place.
We have two now. We'll end up with two. One will be a policy position, and one will be an economic development manager with the railroad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
That's a good. What you just added was really good.
We'll do a follow up on this after the state of the county.
Okay. So. Because we can't start the hiring process until we get the green light.
Right.
And
it'll just do
so
best.
That policy guy.
I think. Even. That's true. Even in the analyst position, is not what Kelly was fully designated as.
Exactly.
So therefore, we need a new description for the analyst position.
That would be the second one.
I have that ready to go. We have three. There's three tiers of my position. There's a policy assistant, a senior policy assistant, and a senior policy analyst. And what we would do to make it budget neutral. The policy assistant is the same salary scale as the current railroad coordinator position, the one I would advocate to delete if we successfully combine this job. And that would just be a one-for-one trade, railroad coordinator, not needed anymore because the economic development director is doing that. So we delete that and add the policy assistant, the same salary scale.
I haven't got it done. I want to do a salary comparison with Olympia and Evergreen Freedom Foundation. I don't know of any other analysts in the private sector.
Any other policy analysts?
Policy analysts.
Yeah, I got you.
And if you could think of any more.
I don't know.
I want to get closer and compare with the private sector.
I can cut your pay.
You can look at the state. I mean, because they, I know the state has them. They have, you know, in the govs, if you're thinking executive policy analysts, they have, the govs shop has, I mean, they probably have 10 of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you can take a look at that.
And I think both houses have them.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure kind of at the local, because we have such a different structure. Usually each commissioner has their own staff, so you wouldn't. So it's hard to get apples to apples on that. So I don't know what Spokane has.
Well, Axel's already done some comparisons.
He already has some? Oh, okay, cool.
Axel, do you recall the
county? I've looked up all the other comparable counties.
For policy analysts?
For policy analysts. Uh-huh. And I can share that information.
Yeah,
if you compare
how many they have,
if you compare with analysts.
Don't start government, whining.
Analyst in government.
Snohomish has eight of
that's not what I'm looking for.
Holy crap.
So you want a private sector equivalent.
Yes.
You'd have to tell me a little bit more about what that looked like. Cause
policy analysts, Freedom Foundation. Has
okay.
Go ahead and compare it with Olympia's analyst. I can't do the other one.
So like Washington State Senate staff and House staff.
I was trying to keep more in this area. Rather than go outside the area. I know there's several back in Washington, D.C., but you got to keep them from the area. So
I don't know what the equivalent would be on the private side. I don't know.
I don't know. I don't either. I just want to have that comparison.
Okay.
Well, on the private side, I mean, who are you looking at? You're looking at like a Berger or ABAM or a consulting firm, but those are pretty much, you know, they're doing transportation or they're doing public outreach.
Well,
they're not doing everything.
The same, yeah.
So, I mean, it's, you know, I'm kind
of a generalist. I'll get more names for you.
I'll do the research.
Yeah. Just do a Google search on Axel-like.
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing will come up.
Yeah.
Axel Rose will come up.
Yeah.
All kinds of.
All right, so next week, for sure, this thing's going out the door.
I think that sounds like a get it done
that's
guy.
That's kind of a get her done kind of thing, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm going to be working on this. Absolutely going to be working on it. Okay.
Yep. All over it.
Gun policy.
Okay,
I think
Chris.
We're still in limbo.
Yeah, Chris left me some language to read you. He won because, you know, the impression was that you all did make a directional decision last week to, at least while we're reviewing the policy, not discipline employees who may be in violation of the policy or have already been carrying a concealed
weapon. Have we ever had to discipline anyone for that policy? Since you've been here, Mark? I mean, not you in this position, but have you ever heard
I have not heard since
because people are all worried about, oh my gosh, this moratorium is going to open the floodgates or something, but
yeah.
I've never heard of someone being disciplined for this.
I have personal experience with one employee in my 13 years
uh-huh.
plus that was carrying a concealed weapon, and I had to tell him to stop doing that.
So how did you know he was?
Because I had people who saw the weapon and who reported it.
That's one of my concerns would be that my concern is that all of a sudden people say I could bring it, I could put it in my drawer,
yeah.
And then I could walk off and go to a meeting.
Right.
That's not what responsible people do. It either stays on your body or it's
right.
in a locked compartment. We have locking drawers in our desk. So that's where my and I'm scared of concerned about brandishing. I don't want to go there. We don't allow that. I don't want to get into making a policy that says you can't brandish, you can't leave it in an unlocked door. I don't want to go down this avenue of do's and don'ts. And I don't know if it would be successful to address it along the way or not. I don't know.
Did we ever find out what the other 38 counties are doing? The WASAC?
Well, I saw that there was an email exchange. You did make an email exchange with Eric Johnson, right, in WASAC, and I haven't personally.
Yeah, I haven't
either. Never
seen
counties, but
I'm heading up there tonight. I'll ask him.
Can I read this language to you, though? Because Chris.
So what did you ask,
yes.
Eric? Just
okay.
to see what are the other 38 counties' policies?
I asked him what are the policies do they have.
Yeah.
And I'll ask the commissioners, because I'll see them tomorrow at
the
legislature. I'll just ask around, too.
The common area?
Yeah.
And the common area, to me, is into the front office here to Jennifer. That's a common area.
Right.
Yeah.
So Chris the direction would require a change of the policy. So what Chris has drafted is, in the weapons policy, it says, this policy is currently under reevaluation by the Board of Commissioners. Pending completion of this review, the board has determined that no disciplinary proceedings will be initiated against an employee that, one, carries a weapon or conceal or carries a weapon concealed on their person or in an authorized place as defined by RCW, and two, possesses a concealed weapons permit on their person. Employees who carry a firearm openly shall continue to be in violation of the policy.
That's my other concern.
So yeah, that's the temporary language pending a more complete review.
And
because we have to answer the questions, Commissioner Mielke, that you brought up.
Yeah,
you
know, that was one of those. I need to go down the road. We say, well, we want to allow someone to have that that right. Well, in some cases, they have a right to open carry. And so therefore, somewhere along the way, we're going to say, no, you're not going to be allowed to open carry.
Right.
So, and that open carry is very, very tedious, like the guy that got arrested here.
Mm-hmm.
If you intimidate somebody, and therefore the intimidation would be in the eyes of, in fact, that would be one that we might, if we ever get that far, is that you can have concealed carry as long as you don't intimidate. Maybe.
Well,
no, maybe.
We're starting from scratch here, and I expect that there's other counties that have already solved this problem. I'm thinking that it's not going to be a question of do we or don't we. It really is going to be a question of what requirements and obligations, responsibilities do we have? Do we want to make sure we get that right?
Yeah, it's how.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, you, there's been some discussion amongst our employees. Axel has been the recipient of input from employees. He's got anonymous input here so that we can't identify who provided it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I apologize for the hastiness of how this looks.
Oh, it's actually good. It's
what
fine.
I did is I just took the emails I've been getting, cut them up, and put them on here so that there's no names or thing. I try to take things out that say what department people work for just so they feel like they can communicate with y'all.
Yeah.
In addition to this, at our management team meeting, we had a discussion, and with the exception, I think, of the assessor's office, who were like this, and Bob Stevens, who I think would like to be able to take advantage of the new policy. Universally, the sentiment, besides those two exceptions, was that they don't support it, and their employees don't like the idea either. And then there was a coalition meeting with some of our union folks, and they expressed their concerns as well. So
how do they feel about elected officials carrying?
I've only received one comment that addressed that
because you know
specifically.
It's strange because only because it had been brought to the forefront.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Does anybody know anybody else carried? I would venture to say 25-30% of our employees have concealed carry.
Well, whatever the percentage is, it ought to be done in a way that you cannot tell.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thus concealed part of the carry.
Exactly.
That's the whole point.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I think the general sentiment is that I think it's fair to say that more than a simple majority of the employees don't want this to happen.
Sure.
I think you're wrong.
Well, actually, that is a factor to consider, but I don't think that good policy is going to be based on majority rule or set policy by committee. The idea behind is to get a sampling of everybody's thoughts. Anybody can give us ideas and make sure that we have heard all the different concerns that people may have, plus and minus, as we make this decision, so that when we get it, some combination, if we end up with allowing it, that we might have something here that will make it better, and something here that will make it better.
So the thing that causes me pause when I hear Mark say that about employees, and when you're saying, hey, we're not going to make policy by committee, the one thing that it causes me pause is that this is a policy directly impacting our employees and our employees' work environment. This isn't a county policy like we're usually doing that affects citizens and otherwise, and we take public comment. So it is different in that, and And so I do want to be sensitive.
Me too.
At least from my own standpoint, I want to be sensitive to
sure.
that we want our employees to have a happy, healthy, safe workplace. And we certainly
agree.
You know, and I would like to, you know, to think that, you know, if we do this, it is the how, and whether it's not whether we have mm-hmm. to or don't. But I don't know. I just it just causes me pause.
There's a couple things. We seem to pick and choose what our rights are when it's established in the Constitution. I sent you a copy of the one that says, replace the gun with gay and tell me how you feel about that. So it says, you know, you will not permit any gay people here, or you will not allow gun carry here. There's a comparison here. They both have a right to be here. And so which one are we going to pick and choose?
But this I guess I'm trying to figure out, like, I have a very clear policy perspective on this. But now I'm thinking, okay, I need to make sure I don't completely think of this as a policy discussion, because it
right.
gets me,
right.
takes me down the Second Amendment rabbit hole, and I will fight on that. But I got to think, okay, no, this isn't a policymaker responsibility. This is part of our hybrid role, where we are serving an employer function, you know, an administrative, executive function, and try to put that hat on, and how can we balance it? And
I agree.
I think we can find that balance, though. I mean, that's what staff's doing right now, right, is trying to figure out, is there a balance we can reach on this?
Yeah.
Is it? Is that what you guys are doing?
Answering every conceivable question about if you go to the men's room or the ladies' room, can you take your weapon in the bathroom? If you go to the gym at lunch, can you put it in your locker? Those
people
questions
don't conceal it in their shorts. Right?
Yeah. Well, it's concealed somewhere, and presumably you go into a stall, it's still concealed.
Having read and received all these, I think, and had a lot of conversations and been at the management team, you know, I think where we're at is sorry.
You got all choked up about it? Are you?
I
know
it's
going to be okay.
That's a heck of a
song.
No, I've got a sore throat.
Is it that little piece of wire?
Yeah, it is.
Fish wire.
You know, Mark's being candid with you. What we've heard so far has not been rosy or positive on this change. Now, your question is there a place we can get to? I think that question's still unanswered. I mean, most people are not positive about this change that I've spoken to or received. But that is, I think, based on a reaction to a question that says, should we just let people carry guns into the county now?
Mm-hmm.
Now, we know that we're talking about something different and changing this policy. So the real question is, under certain and the right circumstances, would you be okay with
right.
a coworker having a concealed weapon at work? I think that's a very different question depending on how you define those circumstances, and that's what we need to work through. So,
yeah, because they're assuming they're envisioning the free for all.
The worst. Yeah.
The policy will not be a free for all. There will be
right.
conditions, requirements, et cetera.
It's important for us to be able to send that message.
And when they see those conditions and requirements, some people will feel more comfortable than they
mm-hmm.
do now.
Well, and I will say from my perspective, one of the things I'm looking for in the policy is an education requirement.
I agree.
And we've talked, like, that in Washington, for your concealed carry permit, you don't have to do any hours of training. In most states, you do, and in some,
Utah,
8 hours, that's crazy.
Isn't Utah a really good standard that you can, those courses are available here.
Exactly, recently. And they're great courses that do, they talk about the responsibility associated with it, and they go through scenarios, and it really does give a better sense of the issues with concealed carry. So, I mean, I definitely think that, you know, if that's a right, if there's a right, there's generally a responsibility that goes along with it.
And if you take those courses, you get reciprocity.
I know,
yeah.
It's true. Yeah.
Yeah. And then
there
should be some certification regarding the serviceability of the device, because if you don't maintain a weapon, it's far more likely to...
Yeah, now you're getting into the gorilla people of, like, are you going to check their guns? I mean, I don't know, man.
Inspection day.
Yeah, I don't know. That seems...
We'll do it at the shootout.
I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying, but yeah, all of a sudden you're taking my gun out of the holster.
It's not concealed
you know.
Anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you can do that. So, even the feds have addressed it. They now allow you to have a gun in your car You can't take it into their facility. Mm-hmm. And I always have a problem with mm-hmm. that.
I don't.
And my problem is it safer in my car or is it safer on my person?
Well, it does you no good if you need it, if it's in your car.
I'm always worried about car break-ins.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Sure, of course.
Well, can we send at least this message to the staff that it's not a free-for-all? It comes with responsibilities, obligations, conditions.
Yeah. And we'll work with them on what those conditions yes. would be.
And we want to hear from everybody to make sure if they have ideas as to what those conditions, that criteria, those obligations, responsibilities are, by all means, fire it off.
I'm somewhat surprised reassemble a policy
that we haven't received any emails because I have surely received emails from employees unhappy about their job.
Yeah, but I mean...
But
these, you know how it is, man. You receive those a few times, but most times employees don't want to put themselves out there with their name on it to us on something
and,
like that.
And it's important also, I think, that, first of all, this is a good means to do so.
Yeah.
Sure.
That we choose to respect the right to privacy that anybody can can share without us going after and say, who said that? Mm-hmm. So they need to be able to have people need to be able to speak freely and don't worry about being identified as where'd that come from.
Mm-hmm. Right here, they don't trust you. They don't trust you, Mador.
Join the club.
There are people who are speaking freely to me on the phone and to my face and sending me emails.
And a lot of those people said, I don't care if you put my name on it. But what I replied to them was, look. Folks, you know, the emails are all public record, so it is a public record.
Yeah.
But for the purposes of this and incentivizing folks to speak their mind about ideas,
them to feel free
to
speak their mind.
I'll leave the names off of them. So this will be a topic at the safety committee meeting with Laura, and we are going to continue to talk about it and get feedback from the employees.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's in our interest, though, to expedite the development of a new policy if the board is going to direct that be done so that we can settle the issue down a little bit.
Yeah. And I'm glad you're going to be talking with WASAC.
Yeah, you bet.
They might not have it at their fingertips, but hopefully they'll compile it.
At the very least, I'll, prod Eric to see if we can't get that, and also I'll see a bunch of commissioners tomorrow, so I will definitely ask them as well and ask around and see what they do.
I'm curious to ask Chris Horn. Say we banned them as we have in our policy today. What ground do we have for defense? I know private businesses have a right to do that.
Yeah,
public entity, I'm not sure.
Chris has referred a number of times to case law on this very question.
What did he say?
He said that. There is a general gun regulation, RCW, in the state that says that cities, counties, municipalities cannot enact laws that are stricter than state law. However, as an employer, you can prohibit the carrying of weapons in the workplace.
If we become an employer, then we exempt from that rule?
Case law has shown that employers can prevent their employees from bringing weapons. And
I know
and
they can in the private sector, but I don't know because we are public.
Chris said last week that public sector as well. We can.
So we have the right to ban them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And, it's a policy decision of the board, of course.
I'm going to wear a shirt with a big target on it.
I think we already have those, man. It's usually the target's on our back, though.
Said didn't wear his orange vest.
Yeah, exactly.
By the way, did Mark Wilson, or is he the right person to respond to make sure that we know about if the liability issues go, which way they go? Do they actually improve, or do they get worse?
Well, I think he said it's a mixed bag. If we disarm our employees, we could be sued for disarming our employees if somebody walks in here.
Not providing them a safe workplace.
Right, because I could have saved myself had I had my weapon. Flip side is, I've got a weapon. It's not serviceable. I haven't been trained. I stick my hand in my pocket, bang, I shoot my neighbor. The neighbor sues the county, sues me.
Well, so surely that second scenario is not going to happen if we follow the policy that says, no, there are obligations, there are responsibilities, there is required training.
That right. seems like it would help us with risk management side of it if we have
certainly.
Those kinds yeah. of requirements in place.
Yeah. In fact,
exactly.
we want to make sure that...
But it's not an absolute shield.
No.
Nothing's
not.
Absolute. But for those kind of inputs, if there be other kinds of liability reducer kinds of ideas from Mark Wilson or from the risk pool, other then certainly we want him to share those with
right.
us.
Right. And when we hear from you, Commissioner, from WASAC, which counties are doing what,
yeah.
that we can give that to Mark, and then he can contact the counties that have allowed concealed carry, find out what their policies are, what their requirements are, and so
really
on.
Good call. Okay.
Great. So
okay.
still getting input, is there? And yeah. we sent a positive message that
this is called discipline policy development.
Are you talking about putting that out, like FYI, putting that out to employees? I mean, like actually putting it out to employees?
Well, I don't know. Whatever you think is
we can do it.
What do you think,
Holly can draft a countywide email or something.
No.
No?
No.
Or would you rather do it?
I'm good with it. I'm just...
No, I mean,
they're
would
all
you
coming to my inbox right
no,
now?
No, but I mean, would you rather do it through management team and safe committee and kind of work it through that way?
Well, the frequency of those. I can certainly dispatch something to the management team via email, and then they can disseminate it.
Well, I trust you guys, just to get the message
I've
out
learned,
that we're talking about.
I've learned in politics sometimes you can overreact.
Yeah.
And you react to some of those people who don't know what's even going on.
Right. But
so,
I'm not in politics, I'm in management.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
It's always
believe
politics.
Believe it or not, you're in politics.
I'm very close. I'm very close to it.
You are with you're in politics at the workplace. So.
Yeah.
And for the people
not on the
okay, I surrender
all through your life.
Yeah.
I'm actually glad that you're not in politics.
Yes,
we want to keep you happy and above all that stuff.
He's trying to keep you happy as the former politician.
He does a good job.
I got three of you to keep happy.
Yeah,
he really is.
I'll make a suggestion. Let's keep going the way we're going. It's going to come as a topic to the safety committee meeting. The management through the management team, at least. With the response that I've got, they are rolling it out to their employees in department meetings, and they're telling them to send stuff to me. So let's just keep that
but
going.
The message coming from, we're hearing, it's coming up.
Yeah.
It seems important to say, hey, we're hearing you. We hear you. We are, you know, exactly what Commissioner Medora was talking about with that, so that there is a good message coming back to them that we hear you.
Mm-hmm.
And we are responding.
They don't want to feel
well,
like
I am responding individually to everyone who sends me a comment. Do you want me to put something specific in that?
Yeah.
I mean, it's coming
feel
from
free.
The board's office, but you know, I can say, you know, I gave your comment to the board. You know, the board has your comment. And
so when we all done, I had 750 opposed, and I had 1,400 in favor.
Yeah. That's a lot of employees. I didn't know we had that many, right?
1,600, yeah.
Yeah, we got like 1,600.
So
1,650?
So, and then you can do that with the management team as well, as just kind of let them know, hey, we're working on this, and we hear you.
Yep, we'll do that.
There are a number
and
of
that we want to hear from them. You know.
Thank God we didn't do that on the Commissioner's holiday.
Yeah.
Don't believe
me. Oh, we heard about
believe
that.
Me.
Yeah,
I heard plenty
more,
about that.
I'm sure, but yeah.
Oh, there are other resources too, and I wonder, you know, this could be a time-consuming task for somebody to really search it out.
Could be.
I mean, they got lots of resources. I mean, I don't know, what's that, MSRP? Is that the online?
MSRC.
And actually, I've got to call into Erin Nolan because I believe that she has done, or someone on her staff has done, quite a bit of research on weapons in the workplace.
And and there must be just a large number of them online.
You can call the post office. They had all theirs
not
in their
a great
car.
Example, man.
They went out. They went. They went out in the parking lot. They got their gun and come in. Because you haven't heard about it for a long time, so maybe they don't put them in their cars anymore.
So, do we have any commissioner reports?
I'm good.
Heading up tomorrow morning, but I'll be back in plenty of time for State of the County. So, I will ask about the gun policy. I will see Burgess there. Tomorrow morning, Burgess comes to the ledge steering meeting, so I'll see him there and I'll touch base and see if there's anything he wants me to talk to legislators about. But is there anything that you want me to share?
Yeah, check with the legislators and see what they're doing.
I'm happy to. Yeah, and I generally try to touch base with at least a few. You can't get all of them generally, but I'll generally get at least a few to say, hey, where are we at on things?
Yeah.
Check with our local legislators to see if they go to the ninth order in the House and bring up the legacy bill.
I will ask them. I will definitely
there you
ask
go.
Them. Just for you, I will ask them.
Senator Benton brought out rules today, our industrial land banks.
Wonderful.
So yep. It will be going to the floor.
Yep.
I think that's I killed last here. Year because Wiley was mad at him.
But he's lucky he didn't hold a grudge against Wiley.
I know,
that's
I
Wiley's
know.
Bill.
I know, I know.
I assume that the transportation funding package is not going to happen, but
ask tomorrow to see what they're thinking. I mean, what WASAC and all those folks are thinking too.
Yeah,
election year, who all wants to vote for 11.5 cents?
Seriously.
Well, I just hope that our own delegation, plus Southwest Washington, is going to look out for Southwest Washington, that we're not in paying the taxes that's going to go just simply going
away. They are, but our 1% payback.
That we get our share.
They are, but that's the danger is, and I've heard this already from one Republican legislator from our area, who shall not be named, that asked me, well, is the board going to, you know, if I do this, is the board going to, you know, support me in doing it? Like,
they're
if
looking
I,
for a job?
No, we're not that kind of support, but they're like, well, if I take this vote, I'm going to get hammered by my right from people saying, I took a tax increase. And they look to you guys as leaders within the party to say, well, is the board going to end up, you know, if we are able to get our fair share and there's reforms. And, you know, and it may not be exactly what you would do if you were a legislator, but they decide, all right, it's good enough, we got it, and I've got to get in the game, and they take that vote. Are you guys going to support them and say, yes, we support the action they took because it was, for whatever reason you want to choose, because their concern is that they do it. We tell them to do it. We say, yeah, man, go get the best deal you can. And then at the end of the day, we say, you know, I can't believe you took a tax vote. That was dumb.
Isn't there automatically, because of the Iman initiative, isn't there automatically a referendum that will go to the people?
Not necessarily. No. It's not automatic. The expectation, I think, is that there will most likely either be a referendum or...
That would be a good follow-up. That would be the best, because if the people confirm it, then we're all on safe ground.
Well, there's more of a way to, you drive the project forward. I drove all the projects forward. And I never voted for a gas tax.
You can, and that's one way of playing it, and you know that. That's one way they might, and there will be some that play it that way, but there aren't enough votes.
Well, I was
they're going to need a couple of those Rs to, in our area, because what I'm hearing is that, you know, we are kind of behind the eight ball because the mega project's gone. So now to backfill for projects, there's already so many people at the trough. They're saying, yeah, sorry, man, you're too late. And are you even going to vote for it? Mm-hmm. So there's that game being played with them. So there are a couple of them that will probably have to step up a little.
I would say the
same thing to the Democrats.
They removed the project.
But it's easier for the Democrats.
Yeah. But the Climbing Hill name, they removed for 4 years.
I know I've heard it from at least one R in our area already.
When I put the first bill out there for 219th Street Interchange, $37 million.
Yep.
They delayed it long enough that when they got done and okayed it, it was $57 million.
Well, other counties are hearing the same thing. We're not unique in that.
Yeah.
Other county commissioners that are at legislature are hearing the same thing from their legislators. Are you going to support me if I do that, or are you going to throw me under the bus? No.
Realistically, I don't expect that in the next 9 days or so that they're going to be able to come up with something that's going to be right.
I agree.
So
I totally
realistically
agree.
For next session. Hopefully there'll be plenty of homework done ahead of time that says, first of all, there ought to be equity wherever the state population is. Those gas taxes, they get back to those communities. There ought to be some kind of equity.
There's always donor. The bigger you are, even Seattle is a donor.
They're a donor.
Well,
because they're looking at the state system as a state system as opposed to the
piece. The
nevertheless, I get what you're saying. I mean, it needs to be better equity, no doubt.
And reforms need to be there.
Absolutely.
I look at how the WASHDOT is doing things, and the private sector would not survive that. There needs to be reforms there. They need to be coupled together.
18 years
no
we've been asking for reform.
Yeah.
And I agree with both
so
of
next,
you. Can't do
I think
one
next
without
year
the
is
other.
More appropriate than this year.
So the question is, so I will send that in, and that's why I asked Mark Brown, like, what are we supposed to ask them in this? And it's, you know, a no isn't good enough because we'll get run over, but working to specifically say, hey, look, just don't even bring this to a vote this year if it's not ready and you don't want to take the vote, they can do that.
Yeah.
And I think that is the best play for them right now because we don't have time to get our projects in it.
Yep.
And the best thing that can happen for us right now is that nothing happens this year. There's a danger that we've been hearing about, that Puget Sound may say, to heck with y'all, we're just going to do it ourselves and do a regional package. But the lift is so heavy at a regional level, I don't think because they would be having to put that to the voters. And Prop 1, I think it was, they had some big, heavy package in the Puget Sound not too long ago. And it got crushed. So I can't imagine they're going to say, the Puget Sound voters, even if they, you know, Seattle voters don't seem to care about taxes, they're still not going to say, okay, wait, I'm paying a state sales, state gas tax, and you want me to pay this other, and I'm not going to get anything from the state gas tax? I don't see it. So I still think you're right. I think next year would be more likely.
Mm-hmm.
I can pass that on. Like, we would, you know, it doesn't seem like, and if they say, gosh, but if something's going to happen, I'll let you know.
I think Doug Erickson,
I haven't heard any of that,
still on the transportation committee.
I think Doug is, yeah.
And he was,
he's great. I like him a lot.
Him and I together were pushing the 5 reforms.
Yep.
He probably has those really handy in his.
I'll ask Doug. I'm sure he'll either they're on the floor and I can pull him, or he's a good guy. I like him a lot.
When you consider the duration of a tax like this, it's going to be, what, 12 years? You don't rush it through in a few days.
Well, that's the problem.
We've gotten to the point, and we've spent so much money, that you can't get a project done anymore unless you have a gas tax. So as they fall off, and we never have got the answer now, 1992-93.
Yeah. The ones we paid, where's that money?
Where'd that 3 cents go?
Yeah.
Well, the other side, they haven't just started discussing. This is right. I mean, there's been a transportation revenue package that's been talked about for the past 2 or 3 years. They've started the conversations and done of all this. And Mike, I think, was right on it early on when he said, look, this is a 3-year process, and we're in year 2 of the process according to his timeline. And so, you look at maybe year 3 is when they're actually going to do something. I think it's funny that they're talking about a lame duck to try to do it.
Lame duck session, he called it.
That's so funny. I think, it's like, well, we don't want to take it before the vote, and we don't want to take it, you know. Yeah, whatever. Anyway, I'll pass that along, though. Thank you. That's all I have.
Thank
Anything
you.
Else, Mr. Administrator?
We have one vacancy request. It's from Community Services. It's for the what the heck is it here? Program Coordinator, Safe Communities Task Force, Youth Violence Prevention. It's funded by the City of Vancouver, Evergreen, and Vancouver School Districts in mental health dollars.
What is that?
Safe Communities Task Force Coordinator.
Safe Communities Task Force Coordinator.
They work with the youth. It's,
it didn't come out of the Sheriff's Department?
I think they work
with Well,
this is multi-agency. It's funded by 2 school districts, the City of Vancouver, and some mental health money. And they coordinate with
no general funds.
Law enforcement, education, juvenile justice, treatment agencies, local nonprofits, prevention advocates, and others, neighborhood associations, and so on.
And that's a replacement position.
Prior incumbent resigned. So, you know, you can have a week to think about this, but I think it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, I agree. As long as is everybody okay with the mental health tax using it that way?
I have an issue.
What is it?
I don't have any communities out where I live.
We're all in the community.
But this is dealing with areas that really do have higher youth crime rates and and delinquency rates, and really trying to focus in on getting those kids on track so they don't come out to your area and end up
and keep them out of gangs and all that.
Well, kids from out in that area can come to town too.
Yeah,
they do a great job.
That's where we send all the bad kids.
Hey, come on.
Into town.
I've been working a lot with the chief of Battleground.
Bring it back next week.
Next week.
That's fine. I'm okay with that.
Is that in my packet?
Yeah, it should be.
Yeah, it's just behind your agenda.
Yeah.
There's one page.
Yes. 2 pages, 2 and 3. There you go.
So that's the last item on the formal agenda.
That's easy.
Are there any alibis? And I know
we go down
the table.
We don't even do staff reports anymore.
No. Commissioner Mookie does that. So Axel?
I actually don't. I got a couple of
things from Burgess. You guys already hammered the legislative stuff quite a bit, but the RSN integration bill is still in play, so he's working that one. CDM services, the capital request we did, that has passed the House budget. He's trying to get it in the Senate, so that's good news. And the
Good job, Democrats in the House.
Bill to sink the medical and recreational.
You're going to give him some love, man. Jeez.
The bill to sink the medical and recreational marijuana is still in place, so he is working on
bill
that one.
Oh, sink. S-Y-N-C. I was like, sink it.
Sink medical. All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a number of things still in play that we're working on.
Holly.
Yes. State of the County tomorrow. The balloon goes up at 2 o'clock at the Square Dance Center on 117th.
Did you say balloon goes
yeah,
up?
Yeah, is that a term of art? Was that, or you, is there literally a balloon?
Actually, that's a term that people in the military used to use to describe nuclear war. The balloon going up.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Smoke.
Wow, thanks a lot, Holly. Yeah.
Mushroom cloud will rise at one time.
Okay, the program starts at there'll be refreshments, like snacks, 2 to 2.45, to so from the Historical Museum is going to be our mistress, master of ceremonies. She will call everybody their seats at 2.40.
Are we doing something for her? Specifically, somebody like recognizing her work? Because she's leaving us, right?
That's true.
Somebody should say something.
Has that been announced?
Yeah, she announced it. Yeah.
Good job. Oh. Way to volunteer.
Yeah, thanks a lot. No, somebody should say something.
Well, that's a thought.
Because she's been great for a long time at the Historical Museum.
Okay. Yeah. I'll see what can fit in where.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't have to be more than just, you know, I don't know if people know, but she's been great, and she's moving on. Thank you.
Is there a replacement for her?
I don't know.
I haven't heard of anyone yet.
That might come to you because the way we have it structured is there'll be the color guard, presentations of color guards, and we'll have colors. Have a Washougal High School senior who's going to be an aspiring opera singer. He's going to sing the national anthem.
Cool.
Then we'll have the invocation. Then Susan will come back and do a little intro. Then, as you might remember, Commissioner Mador, you read the Spirit Award winners last year while Commissioner Stewart and Milky presented them. Because you did that last year and because you have the majority of the speech, we selected Commissioner Stewart to read this.
You have the helm.
And you two get to present them. And so the reminder is...
They come apart.
Yeah, exactly.
Do not drop.
Exactly. Do not drop. Use two hands.
And show them that they come apart before you hand it to them.
Exactly. Exactly. And this is quite a bit heavier than this is. So, yes. Just remember.
So don't do it blindfolded.
They will be on the table. They will be labeled 1, 2, and 3. So when you read the first one, you don't have to try and read through it to see which one you're supposed to pick up. There'll be 1, 2, and 3.
Okay.
One on the left, two in the middle, three on
the
right.
They'll probably be numbered, too, I would think. So.
Yes, we are going to number them.
Aren't they pretty?
Thanks for that.
Beautiful. Now you see where our coasters come from.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And we're putting... binders together with the whole information about everything involved in there. I think I brought you two copies of your portion of it. Wanted to see whether you all had a particular font you favored of, a favor, a particular size that makes it easier for you to read.
18 font works for
That's
me.
That's 18. This is 18.
It's like three words a page.
Yeah, I think I'll use my own iPad and just get my copy
my
in.
Oh,
that yeah. way I have control over it, what it looks like.
And that's it.
Bring some food.
Canned goods.
Yes,
canned.
Yeah, good call. I always forget when I show up. I did, yep. Like, yeah.
It was in today's FYI, right?
It's an FYI, and Commissioner Stewart is going to thank everybody for bringing food and remind them. And gee whiz, if you forgot, please consider making a financial donation before you leave.
Cool.
Okay, let me volunteer to recognize Susan. If somebody can draft something for me, I've got a pretty good relationship with her. You know, I invited her out.
That'd be pretty good. You kind of start off then.
Is he already going up at the beginning?
No,
I don't have a speaking role currently. But
you do now.
I just volunteered.
You just volunteered.
Because
so who was going to direct the flag and the pledge?
Oh, Sheriff Susan. Susan will
as the mistress of ceremonies.
Ask everyone to stand for the presentation of the colors and the national anthem.
Then how are you going to put him slip in?
I'll have to figure that out.
You could just throw him in very first thing. As he can
I would suggest that.
I can introduce the mistress of the misses of ceremonies or however you say that.
How do you say that? We can save the first for first. The best for first.
Yeah.
Okay.
Does that work, Tom?
I think so. I think that it would help because he is our administrator.
And, I like that.
You might even do the pledge, and then after the pledge.
We're not doing a pledge because we're doing the national anthem instead.
Oh, okay. After the national anthem. And then you would introduce Sue, and then at that time you thank her.
Say the nice words, and then turn the program over to her.
Exit stage right.
Yeah, and head back and open a can of peas.
Yeah. Or worms.
Okay. So you're going to hook me up with some kind words? You probably have to get with probably.
That wasn't much of a volunteer job.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Like, I volunteered to say, you can put it together. Yeah. Right?
Well, I mean, I don't know when she got here. There's some biographical stuff I need. But
we'll take care of you.
But I can certainly ad lib about the wonderful things she's done for our museum and, you know, the Harvest Fund Day that we've collaborated on over the last four or five years.
She right now, you better help them out.
Will do. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, I guess I got to wear a suit now.
Are we done?
You already had to.
We're done.
Thank you.
Good to me.
All right.